by the way. Extra Bases is back. We took, was it a 1 week break, Jeremy? 1 week
One
break?
week. About a week.
Yeah. You
Maybe
were,
two.
me, I think it was closer to two now.
It was two.
You were at the winter meetings, so this will be a little bit of a winter meetings wrap up. One of the major stories, well, we're not going to get to the major, major story right off the bat, but one of the major stories, at least in Extra Bases land, was the Major League Baseball Scout of the Year Awards. Some guy that we've mentioned on this podcast, Bobby Heck. So they break it up into East and West and then international. Is that how it goes?
Yeah, and I think you got to have 25 years to even be considered, right? So, I mean, it's a longevity award as well. There's some. It was a very talented night of winners. Marty Wolliver was another, you know, award winner. Guy had a lot to do with the Phillies once upon a time.
Yep, I remember that.
You know, so it was good to see those guys get honored. You know, it was good to spend some time with Bobby, his family. You know, the winter meetings is a very interesting place and time because we all get to reconnect and we see each other in one spot. It's kind of like the All-Star game. Even now, everybody's gonna go to the All-Star game. So the winter meetings, everybody's there. It was really good to see Bobby. It was good to see him being appreciated because look, I've said this before. I really believe that Bobby Heck has not been appreciated by baseball. And so for one night, he got his due. It'd be great to see that going forward a little bit more. He's self-conscious about it. He's not a self-promoter, so he's not going to love that. He wants to go to work and be the best person and baseball man he can be. But you know, Bobby's impacted so many people in the game in so many ways, and in particular our city, in ways he doesn't get a lot of credit for, although he's starting to get it now, which is great to see from people outside of here. So you know, it was good for him and good to be part of that experience.
Did he know going in that he was getting this? I mean, this is the one thing on my bucket list. I've never been to the winter meetings. I've never been. This year actually would have been a good year to go. And, but anyhow, so he knew ahead. I mean, it's not like an envelope and they open it up and they, you know, he knew ahead of time.
He knew. And the thing about Bobby is he might've had, and I'm not ever, you know, I'm not saying anything about anybody else's group, but Bobby's so beloved in the game that he might've had some of the biggest cheering sections he could possibly get. You know, it was, he knew he was prepared for it. He's an obvious choice. I mean, Scout of the Year to me is, for him is late, you know, it's Scout of the Decade. It might be Scout of the last two decades. You know, he's just that type of impact person, but, he knew going in, a lot of people were there to see it. A lot of people were there to spend the time with him and pat him on the back and say thank you. And, you know, it's an honor. It's definitely not, it's not something everybody's going to achieve. For example, I'll never get it. I'm not going to ever be in scouting long enough to get that. But he is, and, you know, he's made such an impact on the game, it's overdue.
Well, I was thinking they wouldn't give one to a disgruntled ex-scout anyways. So
that's the whole point.
This is Scout of the Year. This isn't disgruntled ex-scout.
I got that one. Yeah.
I will say, it's very interesting that when I pulled up the article that was written for MLB.com from Jim Callis, when they went through the bios for each winner, or at least the very first paragraph focusing on Bobby Heck, it says Heck helped build the nucleus of the Astros 2017 World Series championship team and 2019 pennant winners. He also played a role in the Rays 2020 World Series run. I need to get Jeremy on the gallery. Yeah, so as you can tell, Jeremy's face, oh my gosh. And you're right, around here, people don't look at it that way, but that's the truth. And we've been saying it. No disrespect. We've given proper credit to other people as well, what they had to do with it. But when it comes to the actual drafting, like Bobby, with the exception of the 15 draft, because Bobby wasn't there for that, right? He wasn't there for Bregman and Tucker.
Bobby's last draft was 2012.
Yeah. So I'm looking right at it. Duh. But it says, while with Houston, Heck oversaw five drafts that produced 25 big leaguers. And, you know, it's funny. When he left, or at least as he was leaving, the big narrative was that the Astros didn't have a farm system and they weren't very good and we need to change all this. But it talks about 25 big leaguers and getting guys to the big leagues. That's the goal, right? I mean, that's the job of a scout. But we all know, and anybody who listens to this, it's also about impact. It's primarily about impact. And when you look at the guys, Jason Castro, George Springer, Carlos Correa, Lance McCullers, Enrique Hernandez, Dallas Keuchel, JD Martinez. Yeah, that's for a 4-year as scouting director, that's a pretty good run.
Yeah,
it's pretty good. Just pretty good.
And that's to start. I mean, there's a lot of other pieces in there that helped out as part of trades other places. There's people like Adrian Hauser, who's with Milwaukee, I believe, still. I mean, there's people who aren't on that list that propelled the club to be able to make the trades and acquisitions that they did because of what was left behind. One of my biggest frustrations with the bloggers and the tweeters is that they decide that Bobby and his crew doesn't exist. You know, the thing about Bobby is it's not just that he's so talented at what he does. Bobby's talented as a human being. I've seen the man stand up in the room and offer his expertise and resources at different times during the year to groups of people who desperately need it, who are trying to compete and get better. The guy gives of himself. Nicole gives of herself, you know, his wife, Nicole. You know, Jordan is in sports and done under own power. You know what I mean? So when it comes to the ethic and the way that Bobby has carried himself and the way, and I'm going to get a little bit emotional myself because he and I, you know, the man's, you know, we're all part of this Jack Cerenzik tree. We're all part of that. And I mean, Jack had like 10 scouting directors with him and not to take away from Bobby, but we were all a bunch of mercenaries and we crossed paths and went different ways, man. And all we cared about was getting to the ballpark and competing and be a part of something bigger. And Bob, nothing epitomized that better than Bobby. Nothing. Anybody the man's touched, he's made better. He's made me better. He's made other people around him better. You know, he's made people he didn't ever worked with or worked around better. He's done everything he can. And the Tampa Bay Rays, if you ask them, they will tell you that nothing happens in Tampa Bay, whether it's personnel or whether it's transactions or whether it's free agent acquisitions, unless Bobby has a say. I mean, he's not a GM. That's one of the biggest crimes in our game in the last decade and a half, maybe 20 years, is that we got walked away from guys like Bobby Heck. There's other people who, no, let me rephrase that. We walked away from Bobby Heck. There's other guys that are good. We walked away from Bobby Heck and we let people with personal agendas maybe tear that down and went to an analytical phase, which, you know, as we revert to more back to the middle, isn't necessarily a bad thing because the game has to ebb and flow. It just doesn't mean that Bobby Heck himself shouldn't have had his opportunity. The man will never say it. He will never get on camera and say, I should have this, I should have that. I'm not even tell you what he wants to do. He's too humble for that. And he probably, when he hears this, is going to get mad at me for even saying it. That's okay. I love you, Bobby. I'm going to continue to sing your praises and talk about, you know, how excellent you are. And the city of Houston, you know, to me, it's sacrilegious with this golden era of baseball we've had in 15 years to act like that started with somebody else. That's just a crime. And by the way, we're talking about it. Ed Wade had the foresight to hire Bobby Heck and bring him in to run those drafts. That regime, that collection of people is how this thing started. And you know what? If you look at what the Astros are doing now that we can all get off our imaginary pedestals, that the Astros have some kind of a farm system that makes sense, what are they doing about it now? They're going to get guys with skins on the wall. They're going to get the Derek Ladners, and they're going to get the people around them. And Gavin Dickey, who's going to run player development, is a great evaluator himself, who's going to be part of that crew. And, you know, look, I might have been a little bit hard on Chris Davis overall. I might have been. I don't think the record says
Chris Gross.
That. I'm sorry, Chris Gross. See, there you go. I don't think the record says what it needs to say, but, you know, what maybe doesn't reflect him entirely. Maybe he was bound. But at the end of the day, Bobby Heck and his crew, you know, Clarence Johns, Ralph Bratton, you know, his cross checkers, his area scouts, they built it. They started it and they built it. And it's actually gone through three different regimes to get here, but none of that matters without Bobby and his people. And the game owes him a thank you. The Houston Astros, love him or hate him, have revolutionized the game. They've revolutionized the game. And if you look at how you did it, here's the playbook. Go get guys that can evaluate. Go get guys that can grind. Go get guys that care about something bigger than themselves. And then put some numbers on top at the big league level to pick it apart and try to find ways to improve in player development and improve in pro scouting and improve at the big league level to win championships on what you've got in the amateur cupboard. That's how you do it. It was done here to perfection. But none of that happens without Bobby and his crew, and he deserves his due.
I know you mentioned that Bobby will probably be upset at you for saying this. My guess is Bobby already is upset at you for posting it on X. So at this point, what do you care? I mean, if you haven't checked Jeremy's X account, you can see he's got a long, long, long post about Bobby. And I'm sure. I mean, Bobby's already mad at you probably. So what does it matter if you're talking about it here? He's probably already upset about what you wrote about on Twitter. Not upset, but you know what I'm saying. Like,
You know, these guys spend far too much time away from the people that they love.
Yep.
To have their accomplishments taken away. They don't do it for that reason. But when they do it and it has that type of impact, they get a chance to lead, to have it taken away from them is criminal. And, you know, some of the people here, the bloggers and the tweeters, they decided to give that to not the Chandler Rome's or the media or the writers who knew better, not those guys, the bloggers and the tweeters who decided they were going to give that to other people because they had a narrative about how bad people like Bobby and myself are versus their way of looking at a stat sheet and automatically knowing who can play is tough because he had to go through that. And you know, I think that I'll say this not to pat myself on the back, because that's not the point. It's just a statement of fact. I know that you afforded me the platform every single time I stood up for what he did and what he had accomplished and what he had meant to this city. And I took some arrows for it, and I do it all over again in the front, in the back, in the shoulders, in the ribs. I don't care. Don't care, because the man deserves it. He's an 80 person. And when you put your heart and soul into something like that to change a city, something that Jack Sorensic taught us all is that one player, I was with Tom McNamara the other night too. We're all together, same thing. And Jack taught us one player can change a city. One player, one team, one player can change a team, and that team changes the city, and that city changes the game. And if you look at it that way and you think about it and you can actually get into what it means to walk through fire to compete, nobody deserves that stuff taken away from them. And when you've impacted generations of baseball like Bobby has, there's probably only a few people in the game that can turn it around like 20 or 30 years. And Bobby did that. And that's important.
Shoot, you talk about one player. I know this is a baseball podcast, but here in Houston, look at what CJ Stroud has done for the Houston Texans. I wonder if we actually got into Dana Brown's brain a little bit on our last podcast, that we kind of understood maybe what he was thinking. Maybe it wasn't the last podcast. We sat here and talked about if Martin Maldonado was still on the roster, or maybe this was my point, that if Martin Maldonado is still on the roster for the Astros, why wouldn't guys like Justin Verlander, Framber Valdez, Christian Javier want to throw to him again and again and again and again, even though that the front office, the manager, the clubhouse guy, the usher, the season ticket holder, they all want Yainer Diaz playing every day. So now we see that the Astros have made it official, announcing the signing of Victor Caratini, catcher, switch hitter. You scouted him, I believe.
Yeah.
And now the tributes are coming in to Maldi from a lot of the other Astros players. Well-deserved. It's interesting. It's the same two groups, also the tweeters and the bloggers. Good riddance, and then wow, you know, thank you for everything, Maldi. That had to have played a role in this, right, Jeremy? That if they bring back Maldonado, why wouldn't the big guns want to continue to throw him, and that would further stunt the development of Yainer Diaz? Or am I just connecting dots that maybe I'm thinking they're closer when they're really far away?
I think it was just time. I think, and first of all, it was your point. Okay, that was definitely your point. Probably two podcasts ago, that was your point about You know, keeping him on the right, everything you said, that was you. And we talked about it a little bit, but to get to where we are today, I think it was just time. Okay. And it was time to go. It wasn't about being a distraction. It was time to have some upgrades and some length. And Maldonado's got a chance to play other places more than he's going to play here. And he clearly wants to do that in his career. And that's why people move on. That's why there's 30 teams, right? So I think it was just time to go. I think Dana knew what he wanted. It wasn't a fit for Maldi in that niche. He wanted to play every day. He didn't want to sit. And he's going to have a chance to go play at least more than he was going to hear. So it became a very easy opportunity to go get somebody that's a little younger. That's fresher. I mean, Garrett Canatini was drafted in 2013. I know it was a second rounder. I want to say Atlanta took him back then, but it was, you know, he was drafted and he got to the big
30 league. Now, I think 30.
Yeah. Yeah. But Maldonado was what, 36, 37. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. We had Martin when I was in Milwaukee and he was in AAA and up and down in the big leagues. And that was 2009, I want to say. Right, 2009 or 10. So you're talking about 14, 15 years ago. So if he was 21 or 22 then as a Puerto Rican player, he would have been through the draft.
Wow, you're right. Martin is 37.
Yeah, he's 37, right? So, you know, you're talking about a seven-year difference. You're talking about somebody who can hit. You're talking about somebody who's a switch-hitting option, who can spell Diaz. You're not talking about right? You got an extra option there behind the plate. And you got somebody who's, at this point, a better athlete. And it's just okay. It's not. It's father time catches up to everybody. It's Martin's turn. You know, he's going to go have a shot to play somewhere else as he's earned in his career, and he'll play there as long as he earns that job. So it was just time, and Dana made the right move. And you know, it's another one of those moves that I understand why Dana's making as he lets the market shake out a little bit. That's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, Caratini has been there, done that. He's caught two no hitters. The Astros sent out news release today mentioned that he's caught two no hitters. Here's a guy that, you know, he's been there, done that, and he can certainly be a guy to help bring Yiner Diaz along. He's bilingual, I would imagine.
Yep.
So it really makes a lot of sense. Would you rather have him or Christian Vasquez? Of course, Vasquez did not have a great year last year. And Ooh, that's a tough one. I've stumped
for the price, I would say Caratini.
Okay.
Because Vasquez is based on his performance, not, you know, he's overpaid a little bit. But being where he was when we had him here, meaning when the city had him, not the Astros, because I'm not an Astro. When the city had him in Houston, he was, you know, I'd have taken Vasquez. I'd have kept him. You know, but today I'm taking Caratini based on where that is.
Dave Wehrmeister died.
Really?
Do you know who that is?
An old-time player, right?
70s and 80s. Growing up and collecting baseball cards, a lot of minor league baseball cards, it seemed like Dave Wehrmeister was in every single minor league baseball card team set I had. Columbus Clippers, Buffalo Bisons, I think teams in the Pacific Coast League. I had his major league cards. He's one of those guys. It just seemed like every pack I opened up had a Dave Wehrmeister card. So rest in peace, Dave Wehrmeister. Juan Soto to the Yankees. We got 10 minutes left. Your gut reaction when you heard the news. I mean, certainly it's an upgrade and it's the Yankees going back to being the Yankees.
It's Soto, Judge, and Verdugo in the outfield with Grisham as a four, right? That's where you're looking at right now. And I would say that they're not done yet. There's more to address for that club. They have to get better in an East where Baltimore is coming. They're hungry. They're good. Tampa's Tampa every year. Toronto isn't relaxing, clearly by their pursuit of a young Mr. Ohtani, right? I mean, you know. Yeah, I mean, you've got some clubs in that division who are just not going to let up, and you better hit the gas with them. So, you know, the Yankees have to become the Yankees at some point again, is the thinking, right? And this is probably a step in that direction. That said, in San Diego, you know, God rest him, Peter Seidler was AJ Preller's sponsor. That was his guy. And when you're there for 9 years and you've got one winning season, it doesn't matter if you're if you're excreting gold, let's say, it doesn't matter. Okay. What does matter is that you've got to win at some point. And AJ is not a bad evaluator of talent. He's pretty good. You know, they keep loading stuff up. He's not a bad evaluator of people. He's pretty good. They just ain't won. And whatever the reason is that they haven't won, can't tell you. I'm not there. I'm not in the clubhouse. I have no idea. But he's been there 9 years, and they got one winning season. And it's widely known around the game that from his protection standpoint, it was Peter Seidler. And so God rest him. Now that he's gone, he's got other people to answer to on the board who may not feel the same way. AJ's got to win. That means you got to shed some payroll. That means you're not going to sign Soto anyway. You might as well load up the system the best you can to keep the train moving somehow, whether it's ship guys out left, ship guys out right. I got no problem with the deal from San Diego's side, and the Yankees got to do it. They got to do it, or they're relegated to something like they had last year, and they don't want to see that.
But now there's talk, if reading Ken Rosenthal in The Athletic, this pushes Judge to center field. And I don't think you want Aaron Judge out there for 130, 40 games, just the stress that you put on his body.
Well, you know, when no one's talking about Jason Dominguez yet because he's out, he's hurt, right?
Well, exactly. So I mean, that would certainly change things.
He comes back, and then you've got Stanton, who's always hurt. No. You know, I mean, Cashman jumped in.
You can say that, not Brian Cashman.
Cashman can't say it. I can say it. You know, Stanton's always going to get hurt at some point because he's taken his body away from being conditioned to play in the field every day, so it's gone backwards. And so, you know, yeah, he's going to get hurt again. So there's going to be a bat somewhere. But you can't play Stanton 7 days a week because he's going to get hurt, and you can't play Dominguez 7 days a week because he's not going to be around long enough. So Verdugo's got to take a day off a week, and Soto probably plays every day.
You know, well, here's the thing, though, now that I'm looking at this, because I went back to when he first came up, and I remember this because obviously the Nationals played the Astros in the World Series. Soto came up as a left fielder.
Yeah.
So why couldn't Soto play left, Judge in right, and then you've got Dominguez in center?
You got Verdugo, who's going to start in center, though, and he's not a center fielder. Alex is going to have to play a corner, and you got Grisham, who's your defensive replacement. So you may see something like Grisham's your comes in the seventh inning. He's just your guy to go. Glover, he's got to go get it. You can slide Judge over to right field and Soto to left if that's the timing. And Verdugo's the one that comes out. I don't know. What I do know is that it looks like an offense-heavy lineup for the first six innings to beat people, you know, senseless, if you will. And then you turn around and get some guys and go catch it. That's old school baseball. Throw me all the analytics you want. That's old school baseball. Players get to play how they want to for six innings. The manager gets 7, 8, 9. That's the way it works. So I think when you have that type of roster breakup, that's what you're looking at. They're certainly in a position to score some runs. And if you factor in Stanton, there's enough at bats in there. There's enough off days in there for when guys come back, guys get hurt in their track records, and you know how that's going to balance out. So I like the move for both sides. San Diego had to do it, and so did New York.
There's also been some talk, Jake Meyers, that the Astros have received some offers, but they think Jake Meyers is a center fielder. And if that bat comes around, but for me, Jeremy, the bat hasn't come around. And I just, my whole point is, if you got offers or interest, I think you should capitalize on that.
You know, I think you're right. However, I will say that when Dana talked about him before with what they were looking for, if you really think he's a fourth outfielder, but he's your best defensive center fielder, if that's what you believe, and you got to run him out there, right? You don't know what you're going to have with Dubon. Dubon really is made to be a super utility guy, but he's playing center, right? So if he can play short, he can play center, he can play second. You know, there's something called regression to the mean. Is Dubon going to go out and do what he did? Don't know. Let's get these guys from the bats and see. What I really think that means is they're not getting the money to get what they want to get. That's what I think it means, okay? They don't have anything to trade from within. We know that. No matter what the bloggers and the tweeters say, there's nothing in the system to go ahead and trade for an everyday middle of the diamond defender that can hit. You got to draft those guys. And if you're not going to go sign those guys on the market because either they're out, not out there, or you don't want to spend, right? Because you got your own people to take care of internally, then Meyers got to play. That's what that means. Meyers got to play, and so does Dubon. And you got to go find those guys and hope you get the most out of them while they're here. So I don't have any problem with Jake Meyers staying. I just think the hyperbole is a little bit much. I think let's just get down to, you know what? You can go pick it up. You can go get it in center field. And when we get offensively, we got McCormick. We got Alvarez we can put out there for a day or two, which, by the way, a certain analyst, you know, when they said they were going to run him out there for 150 games last year, said, what? Put his butt in DH, left-hand hitter batter's box. That's where he plays. And guess what's happening now? Uh-oh, wait a minute. Let me see. McCormick in left. Myers in center. I believe that's a guy. Who's in right? Tucker. Tucker's in right. And then you've got Dubon as your extra guy. And that leaves Alvarez playing left-hand hitter. Okay, and that's how you're going to spell those guys a couple of days at a time. Maybe McCormick picks up in center field. Maybe Dubon's out there. Maybe Myers becomes your fourth guy. There's a rotation there. So I don't mind keeping him. I just let's cool it on the hyperbole if he's going to play every single day out there in center because he's the second coming of Grady Sizemore. Let's cool on that a little bit.
Rule 5 draft. I talked to you about this before we came on. You said you hadn't seen it. The Pittsburgh Pirates selected in the minor league phase a guy with some historic production.
Uh-oh.
They chose Seth Beer.
Was that in the A-ball phase?
No.
What phase was that in?
No, the minor league phase. AAA, oh. I think, probably. Yeah, AAA, because Indianapolis Indians, that's what it's written on the transaction wire. All right, everybody. That's going to do it for another Extra Bases with Bristol and Booth. For Jeremy, I'm Jason. Until next time, we'll talk to you later.